You're listening to The Plug with Neil Griffith.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of The Plug Podcast with me, Neil Griffiths. Thanks for listening wherever you are in the world, whatever in the world you are listening on. It's good to have your company. We've got another big episode this week. Before we get into it, I just want to say a quick thanks to everyone who checked out last week's episode with US singer-songwriter Noah Kahan. The response to that episode has been ridiculous. We appreciate all the love we've been getting for that, and even to the people who have sent some weird DMs, we appreciate you as well. But moving on to this week's episode. This week, I am joined by Detroit, Michigan's own Quinn 92. Quinn came on the podcast this week ahead of the release of his fifth studio album. It's called The People's Champ, and it is out everywhere on January 27th. Quinn and I spoke about the new record and keeping the underdog mentality despite huge success in the past few years, which has included headline shows at famous venues like Red Rocks and Radio City Music Hall. Not bad for a kid who got his first number one song while working at an insurance company. For Australian listeners, Quinn will be heading to Australia in February for his second tour of the country. Please, no shooies at these shows. Tickets are on sale now. And for US fans, stay tuned for some very big tour news, which we also spoke about right here. This is Quinn 92 on The Plug Podcast. All right, welcoming to The Plug Podcast, Quinn 92. Quinn, thanks so much for coming on, man.
Thank you so much, man. Good to see you.
How you doing? Where are you right now?
I'm actually in State College, Pennsylvania. I have a concert tonight here at Penn State. I've never been here before, so I'm excited. I'm kind of on my I've been doing a lot of these random college shows over the last few years, I should say. I've been doing these like every now and then. And so it's good to always kind of come back to a college campus. I still feel like a college kid at heart. So it's definitely a good thing for me to just go back to my youth a bit when I come back to schools like this, and especially like a Big Ten school like this. I went to Michigan State. So this is a school I always grew up seeing, playing foot. We played football against them a lot in basketball. So no, it's good to be here. I've never been here, so it's beautiful. Yeah, so I'm psyched.
Yeah, I'm sure you can tell that from my accent that I'm Australian. What are like college campus concerts like? I mean, we call them universities. Like, yeah, there are parties and there are concerts, but generally, like when you have big exciting names coming around, they're just normal concerts.
I would say that they're definitely more loose, high energy, like a standard, ticketed event that, sure. That I would play like on a normal tour. I like them though, because it feels like there's no rules. I mean, there's clearly rules, but like, it feels like there's a lot of pressure taken off of the typical, cause at the end of the day, like, look, I'm sure you went to university. I went to college. Like, you know what it's like to be that age and just to go out and have a good time with your friends. When I was that age, I wasn't holding the artist to like a certain standard. I was just like, yeah, I just want to see someone cool and have a good night and whatever. And so I think I try to remind myself of that mentality that I used to have as a kid going to see concerts in college. And now that I'm the guy doing the concert, I think it takes the weight off my shoulders a bit. But yeah, no, it's fun. I mean, every show, all the kids or fans or whatever, how you ever want to say, like, they're always very respectful and cool. But yeah, college shows definitely, they definitely have a different feel to them and probably for the better. It's just a little more fun, looser, you know, no rules kind of show.
Yeah. Are they always big or bigger names? Like, did you see anyone?
I was going to say, like, I saw, do you remember the DJ Hardwell?
Yeah, dude, he's like one of the biggest DJs in the world.
Yeah, yeah. I'm okay. This is how or out of the loop I am with electronic music.
Sure.
Yeah. I saw Hardwell at school when I was going to college when I was like maybe a sophomore or freshman. And then who else? Macklemore came to our campus.
Wow.
So like, yeah, like pretty big names. How about you?
This is the thing, like when I'm thinking like our university or college parties, like there were just like cool local bands, maybe like an acoustic guitarist. Like we didn't have fucking Justin Bieber come play, you know what I mean? Like it was never that big.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's still cool.
It's really cool. And then I mean like I went to school up in the north, but you go down south in the States and you have schools that pay a lot of money for like Greek life, like fraternities and sororities is very big there. And a lot of people donate who were in those fraternities or sororities prior. Once they graduate, they just keep donating money. It's like a bigger tradition, I would say, in the South, in the US. But why I say that is because these fraternities, their budgets are crazy. And so every week, like four different massive artists on campus playing a show. It's like little festivals happening every weekend at like Alabama or LSU, you know, and it's pretty crazy. Yeah, it's cool. Tonight I'm at Penn State, so hopefully it's going to go well.
It's funny you mentioned like those budgets. The first time I came to America, I'm a big Denver Broncos fan, so I went to see the Broncos play, and I think like Black Eyed Peas played, not the halftime show before, because I know you played the Detroit Lions like a couple of weeks ago, but like they play before the show during your national anthem. There's fucking fighter jets flying over the stadium. Like in Australia, you'll get like a cool band, but they'll be like on this tiny stage, maybe near the end zone, and that's it. The budgets here are ridiculous, but like in the best way, right?
No, man, I know. I mean, especially the NFL, they just like to do everything at the highest level, but. Yeah, it's crazy, man. We definitely throw a lot of money at entertainment here. So,
how did you find that Detroit Lions game? I was gonna ask about that later on, but fuck it, we're here now.
Segue, yeah, that was great, dude. I mean, for me, that was a huge surreal like bucket list moment. I mean, I grew up as a huge fan of them. I still am, but you know, I grew up like a couple miles down the road from where they play, and have been to games and have seen. I've seen halftime performers and stuff at their events, and like for me to do that and to check that off my list, I guess was really crazy. And shout out to them. I mean, everyone who works at the Lions and even the fans too, like everyone was just so supportive. And because I said this the other day, I was doing another interview and I was like, yeah, they didn't like fans don't go there to see a concert. So they didn't have to be receptive or they didn't have to be as welcoming as they were. So I really don't take that for granted. Like I've been in positions where I've been to sporting events and I've seen other artists play and it's gone horribly wrong. And the crowd's just cold and maybe their team's losing. Like we were winning going into halftime. So I was like, thank God. Cause had it been the other way around, they probably wouldn't have had the tolerance to like see me come out and sing a bunch of shitty pop songs. So it was good. I'm happy it went well. The performance was great, but more importantly, like I said, like just the environment was very like welcoming and I felt right at home. So yeah, it was great.
Yeah. Like thinking of the performances I've seen you do, like I saw that halftime show. Obviously you played on Corden a few weeks ago. You played smaller venues. You played bigger venues. Like you own that moment, dude. I think you're at a stage now and we're a week away from this album. Your live performance is in such a good place, and to see that it's can be converted from an NFL halftime show stage to a talk show, you're going to Australia in a few weeks to play these awesome theater shows.
Yeah.
You're in a really good place live performance wise, my friend.
Thank you. Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. I take that as a massive compliment, because that's one thing I think, the live performance I've been trying to make as like a staple of my brand, I guess. Like, I think it's one thing to, you know, have streaming numbers and have, you know, followers or whatever, but selling tickets for me and in creating that environment for a live show has always been like the biggest thing I wanted to accomplish. And so, yeah, like you said, I think being able to play a small club gig and then go play something like James Corden and then go play, you know, the halftime show at the Lions game. Like I think if you can have a show that translates to all those different environments and sized venues, but still feels big no matter where you are, that was always the goal for us. So like that's probably the best compliment you could have gave me, because that's exactly what I'm trying to do. And just, I want to make sure that people like always know that, you know, if I announce a tour, they always remember the last time maybe they saw me and how great it was, that they'll want to come back and see it again, or they'll want to tell people to come with them the next time. And yeah, that's always been like, I think our business model has been, like put out great music and do that. But like, let's really hone in on a great live show. And cause I think that's always the the thing that, you know, as an artist, you want to fall back on, even if your streams aren't well, hopefully you can still sell some tickets and play a good show. So yeah, I'm very, very fortunate to be in the place I am right now, but you know, it's just the pressure of always wanting to one-up yourself and keep that momentum going and find ways to keep the show creative and different looking, whether it's from like production or throwing in older songs or what have you. But yeah, but thanks for saying that. I appreciate it.
No, well, let's talk about where you are right now, because spoiler alert, we are recording this and releasing it the same day. We're a week away officially from the release of the People's Champ.
Yeah.
I was pretty shocked to even, like, I didn't realize going in, this is your fifth album.
Yeah.
How are you feeling, man? 7 days out.
I know. It's crazy, dude. Like, I didn't know that I would ever make five albums. Like, it wasn't even, I think the rate at which I've been making music has been pretty, I mean, comparatively speaking, like other artists I know, and this isn't saying what I'm doing is better, because I think everyone has their own formula. But for me, I just like I've seen some artists do like an album and they wait 4 years and they do another album, and you know, everyone just has their own timeline. But for me, I just like, you know, I made my first one and I was like, okay, let's make the next one. And then it wasn't like our plan was to make, I think we have now, like, this will be the fifth album. I think we've done like five albums in like 4.5 years or something.
Which is ridiculous. Like five albums by 30.
Yeah. It's a little too much. I almost teeter.
I didn't mean it in an insult. I meant like, that's a fucking impressive effort.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I think it's tricky to like, to want to stay motivated and do your job and stay creative and pump out music for people, but also not like oversaturate the market and give people too much of yourself, because you obviously don't want to do that and have just people sick of you. And you know, I think that's why I think when artists who take some time off, I think that really does them justice, because it they come back as like a much fresher voice rather than pumping out year after year, album after album. But for the case of me, my fans have seemed to embrace it the right way and have seemed to enjoy it. So I just kind of was like, all right, let's keep operating that way. But I feel good though, man. Yeah, this album's coming out soon, and like you said, I think this will come out the day that it's out. And I think it's a really I think it's a good like reminder album for me. And what I mean by that is, I think the goal for the album was not to make something that was like conceptually linear and this crazy sort of thought out, you know, plan. It was like, I went into this process, I had switched record labels at the top of the year this past year, and I wanted to just kind of go in with a clean slate and work with people I hadn't worked with before, and just kind of, more importantly though, like make music just to make music and just focus on being rather than trying to become something. And I think this last year was very reflective for me, and just, I realized I had, you know, a lot more gratitude in me than I realized. And I was making music to make it, but more importantly, I was just trying to stay present. And that is actually kind of how the message behind this album came about. It's called The People's Champ. And I think, you know, we've branded it in this sort of sports world and just because I thought it was funny and I could play like these different characters and even for the live show, we're going to make it very sports themed and feel like you're at like a sporting event. But deeper than that though, the meaning behind it is The People's Champ is really me just preaching to people that like, you already are your own people's champ. You are your own authentic self. And I think we overlook sometimes that we already have everything that we need. We try and reach out for things outside of ourselves to become something, and society definitely preaches that to us. And through making this album by just wanting to be present, I realized that this is exactly how I wanted to brand the album, was just, you know, being comfortable in your own skin, no matter what that looks like, and just being authentically who you are day by day and not trying to get too in your head about it. And just owning the moment, owning who you are, just be yourself. I think I needed that reminder more than anyone. So I'm glad I landed on that, I guess, going into this one.
I was really hoping that it was a nod to Dwayne The Rock Johnson and pro wrestling, which is really disappointing for me personally. But dude, what I really loved about it, like the whole theme of it being like the underdog and staying humble and, you know, working towards a goal. We've just spent the last couple of minutes talking about the success you've had in the last few years, these big gigs you're playing, you know, five albums by the time you're 30. How do you stay in that mindset? And why do you still feel like the underdog and you still feel like you have to earn your stripes despite the cool shit you've been able to do in these last few years?
Yeah. I don't know, man. I think I think you're right. I have been able to, like, on paper, it seems like I wouldn't think that of myself, but I definitely, it's a mix of two things. One, I would say I just naturally have a bit of like imposter syndrome. I feel like I don't, ever since making music and having a bit of success, I always felt like, it wasn't merited, I guess. And I've always felt like I had to keep pushing myself to get to a point where I could like accept that I've earned the things that I've had or that I've acquired, I guess. That's a deeper left conversation we could have some other time. And I've some of the songs on the album actually point to that. And that's just some shit I on myself. But no, to the point of like the underdog though, like there's times when, you know, I don't know, I still feel like I have to prove myself, and you know, we'll mention things to people like, oh, like if someone finds out, for example, I played Red Rocks for like it's not like, oh yeah, that makes sense. That's, you know, he's Quinn. Like, yeah, it's more like, oh, he did? Well, I didn't realize he was selling that many tickets, or, you know, like, or he did, James Corden, or, you know, he's, I don't know, did the Lions game, like we said, like, I feel like I've always, and this isn't to be like, oh, I don't have enough, cause I don't want that to come off as what I'm saying here, but it's more been like, I feel like I put out a lot of music and shit. I just don't think it's, I still don't think I'm like, you know, the name on everyone's tip of their tongue that they want to, you know, mention, I guess, when they think of pop music. But ironically, that's not the goal for me. Like, I don't want to be that. I like the radar. It kind of keeps the pressure off, but I've sort of embraced this underdog role. Yeah. And I think it's okay. Like, I think I'd rather be this. If my career ended tomorrow, I think I'd rather fly under the radar like this rather than be someone with all the eyes on them and stuff. So I almost say that ironically, I kind of want to be that, but I also know deep down I'm more comfortable in my own skin, just being where I am and just doing my music. And if the success comes or continues to come, great. If not, you know, I'm very happy and blessed with what I have, because, and again, that's what the album really is about. Just like embracing who you are and whatever shape or size that comes in.
Is that something you have to keep reminding yourself? Because, you know, we've can name endless artists, actors, bands, comedians, whatever you want to name them, who the bigger they get, sometimes, unfortunately, can go to their head. I've had people on this podcast who, you know, I've had them on right before they blew up, and then I have them on a year later, and they're vastly different people, just in the way they talk, behave. You know, it's sometimes it feels like maybe they know that they're this artist now and people know them.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a terrifying thought, but is there a concern of yours that there will be a certain point where you do something amazing, whether it's, you know, playing a venue you've always dreamt of or winning a Grammy, whatever the hell your ultimate dream is. Once you've got that, is there a fear of how the fuck do I stay humble? How do I keep this underdog mentality?
Yeah, no, it's a totally valid question. I'll be honest, I don't worry about that, because I think, you know, for starters, like going back to Detroit, like I think where I was raised was a town that really, and the Midwest in general, I always say, is like just an area of the country that really breeds hardworking, humble people that keep their head down and for the most part don't let their ego get the best of them. And obviously everyone's human and that happens no matter where you're from. And it's clearly that's something I deal with every day, and I try to check myself as much as I can when I have those, you know, diva moments. But like, I don't think of it that way, because honestly, man, I and not to get too deep here, but I really just don't take full credit on the ideas and songs that I write. I know it's capturing, I'm tapping into something deeper here that like ultimately isn't, you know, my real name's Mike, like ultimately isn't Mike's like ownership. Whether you want to call it God, you want to call it the universe. Like, I think it's just like, as artists and songwriters, we're just sort of capturing ideas from the sky and trying to wrangle them down and claim they're ours, and then hopefully run with them and make them into something great that other people can digest and consume. So I'm just truly a really firm believer that like, yes. Like once I have that idea, it's then my responsibility to run with it. And like I said, form it into something that fits for me and in my life. But that initial spark is like, I just know it's not mine. And so I have a hard time, you know, walking around here, you know, talking to you, being like, yeah, you know, it's been, I've really worked my ass off and like, these are all my ideas and how great am I? Look at me, you know, it just doesn't fit right with me and doesn't sit well with me. And yeah, I think I work hard, but again, like, I just don't think I can give all myself the credit. So I maybe next year I'll talk to you and be like, wow, you really became,
you'll be wearing sunglasses. You'll have like two security guards behind you. Then I'll know. Okay.
Yeah.
He's made it, guys.
Yeah. No. But no, man. Yeah. I again, just to reiterate, like, I just think, I think it's important just to realize, I think for anyone, honestly, like, you know, you can be proud of the things you do and the work that you put in, but ultimately, like, a lot of this is luck. Like, there's a lot of really talented people in this world that don't get the same shot that I've gotten. And I know that's deeper than just me and my work ethic. That's something else is happening here where I was just put in a scenario and I'm just trying to make the most of it. So that helps with the humility, I guess, to answer your question. But again, who knows, maybe I'll become a total prick
but yeah. It's important to lean into the grinding news, right? Like, is it true that in 2016, when Kings of Summer hit number one on Spotify, you were still working at an insurance company?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, in a cubicle and like...
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, granted, this was, again, not to diminish that, this was kind of back when Spotify was not as big as it was. And if you had a number one song on Spotify's global chart, essentially that would be the biggest song in the world right now.
Sure.
But this was back when it was still kind of an unknown type of milestone. Obviously, yep. We knew it was something really special, but clearly it wasn't big enough where I could still go to an insurance job and work and talk to the next to me like, hey man, I have a song on the number one global chart, and he had no idea what that was, you know. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. I think again, that's another scenario. Like I worked an insurance job out of college and definitely still had to I was humbled, I guess, by the corporate America and just, you know, like I thought I was gonna like fly out of college and get a record deal and like my life would be, you know, sunshine and rainbows. But no, I had to go right to a desk job that I hated and, you know, had to still work at music on the side. But those experiences like that definitely have helped sort of shape my mindset and have given me perspective on like the things I get to do now and make me, you know, really, really grateful for what I get to do.
But there's something really special about having to do the grind as well, right? Like, think of why a lot of child stars end up blowing up their careers years later, because I think if you get accustomed to success or fame or whatever it is you're chasing, if you get it quickly, you kind of turn to a fuckwit, for lack of a better term. Like,
yeah.
Very famously, and I've said this on the podcast before, Steve Carell from The Office. He is one of the nicest men in Hollywood. I can vouch for that because I've interviewed him. Mm-hmm. And I think it's purely because he didn't get famous until he was 40. So he was grinding for years as a working actor. And then once he got fame, it was kind of like, oh, great, but I'm an adult and I can
process this,
compartmentalize and process it. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you get it at such a young age, or you get your first hit single is your first song, that's dangerous. That's a really dangerous game to play.
It is. Yeah, you're right. It is, man. I know. That's kind of why, you know, I'm a little lucky that I didn't strike success. Cause you look at guys like Justin Bieber and stuff, and everyone wants to bash him when he was doing his like 18-year-old antics. And it's like, I'm sure a lot of us would have done the same thing. And it's not like he asked for people to love what he was just doing what he loved. And everyone,
you give me $200 million when I'm 21 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to be a dick.
Yeah, of course. No, of course. Of course. And so like in hindsight, you know, I'm probably glad I wasn't put in that position, because God knows what I would have done. It probably would have been way worse. But yeah, I think you're right. Like the Steve Carell example, like I think I think it is a blessing when you can attain certain things in your life you've always worked for, but you've put in the effort as just becoming an adult, you know, like through the creative, it's like, you've just had a lot of life experience where now you're ready for that big moment. And you can, like you said, compartmentalize it in a way where you just know how to deal with it better and you're more mature. Yeah. I think like I was always a little ticked off that like things didn't come to me quicker, but now like I'm 30, like I'm actually pretty blessed that, you know, like things are, I mean, A, they're still, I still have a career, but B, like, you know, it seems like I haven't hopefully hit my peak yet. And I'm at an age where I can accept all this stuff with a better probably mindset than I would have when I was, like we were saying, 19 or 20 or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. It's a weird game, man. Everyone's got their own journey. And I think everyone is supposed to, you know, everyone gets dealt different cards and everyone I think is equipped. Like I think Bieber, for example, I think he was meant to have that role. And now it's like his life, it seems like he really has a good grasp on everything he has. And like, it's really taught him a lesson. I don't know. I just think everyone's journey is different and you just got to take it in stride. And I'm trying to do that with me. So.
Well, yeah. To cap off this little segment in a terrifying way, you're in trouble because the People's Champ is really fucking good.
Thanks, man.
So as far as success goes, just watch it back, please.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah. I know. I'll get those bodyguards, like you said. I'll have to do
that. Yeah. Just one. Mark it two max.
Yeah.
Looking for a new sound in 2023? The new ATH TWX9 is Audio-Technica's flagship true wireless headphone. These fully customizable premium buds deliver incredible high-fidelity audio with adaptive noise cancelling and dual microphones for professional call quality. So whether you're listening to your favorite tunes, podcasts, or just looking for some peace and quiet, step up your headphone game with the new ATH TWX9. Available now at JB Hi-Fi Australia and audiotechnica.com.
Dude, I also have to mention, you are going to Australia next month. I'm in New York right now, so I'm gutted I can't go to those shows.
Not to cut you off, but I'm actually going to, this will air, I guess, the day the concert comes out.
Oh, no, it's going to air today.
Oh, cool. Okay. Next Thursday, we're having the album release show.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
So if you're available, come on down. We'd love to see you.
Yeah, I might have to cut that part out of the podcast in case your fans listen and they all just swarm to that hotel. That might be a bad idea.
Probably shouldn't have mentioned that.
I'll cut that out. It's fine. Is this your first tour of Australia?
No, it's not actually. I went there prior to the pandemic back in like, I think it was 2018. And we did around like four shows. We went to New Zealand and then we did about four Australian dates. It was beautiful, man. I'm so excited to get back there because I really just had the best time. And I thought New Zealand was unbelievably just gorgeous, and Australia, everywhere we went in Australia had a different flavor to it. And everyone was so nice. And like, just some of the rowdiest crowds I've ever played for. I mentioned tonight, I'm playing a college show. I would argue that Australian shows are even more exciting than the college show. I just think like, they know, you guys know how to have a good time. And I did like the shoey on stage where you drink beer out of a shoe.
Oh, don't do that. Did you get sick?
No, I didn't actually. I did two of them.
Oh, God. Okay.
My shoes of beer. It's funny, my tour manager is Australian, so I'm gonna make sure I embarrass him every night and have him do a shoey. So, but no, it's great. I'm really excited to get back there.
Yeah. So what happens post that tour? Again, this album comes out on the 27th.
Yeah.
I know you've got some other dates lined up. Are you also gonna be announcing a US tour?
Yeah, we haven't announced it yet, but definitely fans can expect that coming very, very soon, aka possibly the summer. I don't know, but yes, probably without saying, it's coming very soon. So, you know, if you're listening and you want to come get tickets and you live in the States, just be on the lookout. But yeah, no, we're going to do Australia and next month, February, and then March is going to be Europe. And then we'll come back here and do the States very soon after that. So I'm excited, man. Yeah. Just to get back on the road and I love touring. I just like seeing parts of the world and just being able to play live shows is really my favorite thing to do. So I'm stoked.
Is it fair to say that probably for at least the next 12 months, you'll just be on the road?
Pretty much. Yeah, yep. Pretty much. Yeah. It's going to be a busy, give me a busy year. And I'm trying to factor in my wife and I, we're going to try to have a kid this year. So, I mean, there's a lot going on. I mean, we might have to conceive on the tour bus or something, but we'll see what happens.
Mate, get a hotel. Make it classy, please.
Yeah. You think I could afford a hotel. You're right. I don't know.
Can we also then assume that you're just going to relax a little bit as far as releasing music and just enjoy the success of the People's Champ, at least for the 2023? You're not writing more music, right?
I'm actually writing more music. I wouldn't be, people shouldn't assume that another project is not coming this year either. So be on the lookout for something later this year. It's funny. I don't think people realize when you make an album, it depends on how long it takes. But like for me, this has been like nearly a year in the making. I'm like more than ready to start making new music. It's not like it's not like I just finished it and it's coming out next week. You know, I'm my creative juices, I feel like, are back to a normal level, and I'm ready just to try new ideas and stuff. That's always exciting too, is when you can like put a project out and then surprise fans with more music that year when they're probably thinking, oh yeah, he's probably done. Maybe yes, maybe no, you can expect more music, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Can we expect more features as well? Because again, on this album, you've got people like Chelsea Cutler, who you've worked with a lot. You've got Big Sean. That's a big get. When you get in the room with these guys, is it very much we're working on this song, nothing else? Or do you go in there and they say, hey, I've also got this idea, and maybe you're then working on two or more songs?
Yeah. Well, in the case of Big Sean, I actually just sent that song to him. It was actually, we got both connected through we have a mutual business manager that manages both of us. And so I sent the song to him, who then sent it to Sean. And then Sean, we got connected on text and just, you know, went back and forth, and then he sent me his verse. So we weren't actually in the same room when that was made.
Right.
But in the case of like someone like Chelsea, who I've worked with forever now. Yeah. Like sometimes those collaborations happen without them even being meant to happen. Like I was, for example, like I was in the room with her working on, or I'm sorry, she was with me just doing some co-writing. Like she just wanted to help me write some things. And then I was like, for Let Me Down, the song that's on the album, I was like, hey, you would sound great on this. Like, do you want to get on it? And she was like, sure. You know, and that was it. It wasn't anything too premeditated. So that's great, though. I think it's when you can like, and it's exciting when you don't have to have the anxiety of like, okay, I have this song, I need to ask this person, but I'm really scared if they say no and what they're going to think of me. It's way better when you can just be in the room with like your friend and you're working on something, and it's just like, hey, do you want to hop on this? And they're like, yeah, great.
Yeah.
You know, takes the pressure.
What's the vibe of using other artists as leverage to get other artists? And by that, I mean like Big Sean is enormous.
Yeah.
And he's also very good friends with people like Eminem and Drake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it weird to just be like, hey, do you have Eminem's number real quick? Or?
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I know what you mean. I feel like at this point.
Feels like a dick move.
Yeah. I wouldn't say a dick move. I just think like, I mean, I think, look, to each his own. It, like a lot of people play that game and it's great. And like they have a lot of success. I feel like I've become self-aware enough of myself where I know like when I'm stepping a bit too far out of my lane, and like, yeah, he knows Drake, but I don't think I'm like the one. I don't think I'm an artist who, I mean, who knows? Maybe this is just me being self-deprecative, but like I think a Drake collab is just something that doesn't fit really. Whereas Big Sean felt a little more natural. I mean, we're both from Michigan. There's like a connection already. But yeah, you're right. Like it's cool when you can, I mean, at least instead of, I wouldn't say using them as leverage, but like you have artists like that on your resume and other people can see that and be like, oh, well, he's worked with him. Like, you know, I'll check him out or something. It's a cool way to like market yourself. Someone who might love Big Sean might give my music a chance just because they see me attached to his name, and maybe they end up becoming a fan, you know? But no, I try not to think about getting Drake's number too much, but
is there anyone, like even just thinking of like 15-year-old Mike, whether it would make sense for your style of music or not, is there anyone that you would just love to get in the studio with and make something, whether it sees a light of day, irrelevant?
Yeah. Well, for me, I mean, yeah, 100%. I still have like a wish list of artists I would love to work with. Jack Johnson is like my number one. Love him and his music's. Yeah, I mean, grew up listening to him. 15-year-old Mike, that's a very accurate age to even say, because that was like right when I discovered his music. Chance the Rapper would be amazing. I don't know, man. There's so many. A lot of artists who have actually passed away, I would have loved to work with Mac Miller. Yeah, like there's just so many different guys and girls that I would love to collaborate with. We could sit here for hours talking about that, but Jack Johnson are definitely a couple that I've always had in the top of my list.
I think that would work.
I think so. Like, but you know, again, they might be like, who the fuck is this guy? And like, but we'll see. I mean, yeah. I mean, I think so, maybe, but I'll manifest that in the universe right now. And hopefully they'll see this or hear this podcast.
Yeah. Jack Johnson is a big fan of this podcast, believe it or not.
Is he?
No, I don't know. I mean, I doubt it.
You got me so excited just now.
I've met him twice and he's a really nice guy. If I meet him the third time, I'll name drop you.
Next time you see him. Yeah. Next time you see him, mention me just for my sake.
I will do that. Mike, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, man. Again, congratulations on this album. I know we spoke a lot about success and fear of success. Fortunately or unfortunately, whichever way you look at it, I think you're going to have to deal with a bit more success, my friend.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Well, we'll talk soon and we'll catch up at an undisclosed location in New York City next week.
Yes.
It's already cut. Don't worry about it.
Okay. All right. Good. All right. Well, thanks, Neil. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Take care.
This episode is proudly sponsored by Audio Technica Australia. Subscribe, rate, and review The Plug on your preferred podcast platform. And follow us on Instagram and YouTube at The Plug with Neil Griffiths and on TikTok at theplug.podcast to stay up to date with episode releases and giveaways.